Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kansas City police say the city averaged 62 domestic violence calls per month in 2011. In 2012, the average was almost 66 per month. Through September of this year, the number jumped to 72. Today, we'll discuss what resources are available here for the victims, and we'll look at who and what is missing from the current dialogue surrounding this social problem. We'll also give you some shocking stats from a recently published survey that links domestic violence to chronic illness among women. Our guest today, L.J. Coffin, is a local attorney and a law professor at Avila University. She's the author of It's Never a Secret, a novel intended to create a dialogue on domestic violence. L.J., nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Janae Hanslick is executive director of Safe House, which is a local support organization for survivors of domestic violence. Janae, nice to have you, too. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
And with us on the phone this morning is Jennifer Bunschweiger. She's deputy editor at More Magazine, which partnered with the Verizon Foundation to conduct that survey I just mentioned. She joins us from her office in New York City. And Jennifer, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Jennifer, you're farthest away, so let me begin with you. Let's go to that survey,
okay. Because
there were some very eye-popping numbers there. Here's one that grabbed me. 81% of women who said they had experienced abuse have a chronic illness, compared with 62% of women who said they had never experienced abuse. What do you make of those numbers?
That is really the startling finding
yes.
of this survey.
I thought so,
that
too.
That's really kind of sums it up, those two numbers. And I would also like to point out that that's a domestic violence that could have happened decades ago, 20 years prior, 30 years prior. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're in an abusive situation right now. And what we found was that if a woman answered yes to a question indicating that she had experienced abusive behaviors in her past, she was much more likely to also answer yes to having some kind of chronic illness now. It's really quite stunning.
And Jennifer, when we talk about chronic illness, you're talking about like what? What's on the table there?
There were a variety of conditions, arthritis, hormonal disorders, asthma, diabetes, hypertension, chronic pain, severe headaches, irritable bowel syndrome. It really ran the gamut. And what we found that was also quite startling was that not only were women who had experienced abuse more likely to have a chronic illness, they also reported having more conditions than women who did not have a chronic or who had not been abused. So it wasn't just that they were suffering from one thing. They tended to be suffering from two or three or a variety of things.
Janae Hanslick, you're with Safe House. Does that surprise you, this link between domestic violence and chronic illness of one kind or another?
Not at all, Steve. Unfortunately, we see a lot of people who come to seek our services, either residential or counseling, who have been suffering from diabetes, high blood pressure, possibly for years. And so while the statistics and the high level are shocking, it is really not surprising for those of us who see it every day.
The two go hand in hand so often.
Yes.
LJ, how about you? Are you surprised by any of this?
Oh, no. Throughout my legal career and as a professor at the university, I've heard numerous heartbreaking stories about what's happened to a lot of these people.
And again, chronic illness oftentimes accompanies it, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. They don't even realize where it came from, what's happening. And then at that point, we have to do referrals.
I bet that's the case. A lot of times women who have been abused might not realize that there's a connection there because, again, this finding in this survey is the one that caught Jennifer's eyes the most, it caught my eyes the most. A lot of folks aren't aware of the connection.
Oh, absolutely not. Before, domestic violence was considered a private matter, so people did not discuss it at all.
Yeah.
And many times it's a sociological or a social issue, and it's not medical. So now we have the new surveys that are coming out that may drive the change.
Huh. Jennifer, what percentage of your respondents said that just in general they had experienced some type of abusive behavior from a partner or a spouse of some kind?
This number also was quite alarming. We got a 44% response. We believe that part of that was how we asked the questions, which was that we didn't come out and say, have you been abused? We felt that a lot of women don't self-identify that way or wouldn't want to put that label on themselves. But so we asked about specific behaviors. Have you ever been in a relationship where you were slapped, where you were choked, where your partner controlled your access to money, controlled your access to a job, subjected you to put downs, forced you to have sex, those kinds of behaviors? And that's, I think, why we got such a high number, which was 44%.
You know, I'm just staggered by that finding. 44%, that's just a few ticks of the needle from one out of two women who walk the earth in this country. That's just amazing to me.
Yes, and this was a random sample of 1,000 nationally representative women, 1,005. So this was performed by a national survey company who just went out randomly to 1,000 different people. So that makes it especially shocking, I think.
And Jennifer, so you're finding that the way you ask this question by walking through a series of specific actions that may have been taken against women, you think perhaps that elevates this number to almost 1 in 2. Am I hearing that right?
Yes, I think there is a reluctance to identify as someone who has been a victim of abuse or really to believe that you're in an abusive relationship. And it may be easier to answer yes to a certain behavior, and you may not quite have recognized that behavior for what it is.
44%, Janae, what do you make of it?
Well, as Jennifer was talking, I was thinking about the program that we have in the Kansas City area. It's called the BridgeSpan Healthcare Advocacy Program, where we actually have advocates that go into the hospitals and train physicians and hospital and clinic employees on how to identify and screen for domestic violence. And just as Jennifer said, the way the questions are asked are critical because, as she said, it's unlikely someone's just going to say, oh, yes, I'm a victim of domestic violence.
You know, Janae, that also surprised me a little bit that, you know, here we are in 2013 and the spotlight has been shining on domestic violence now for a number of years. I guess we can sort of argue about how long, but there is a new awareness that this is an issue that women need to be proactive in responding to it. All those kinds of messages have been out for a while, and yet there are programs still aimed in this town at sort of getting the medical community on board and more fully aware of how they should respond. I mean, that's all good. I just thought we were farther down the road than that, I guess, to be honest.
Well, again, as Jennifer said, it's very hard for someone to admit that this is going on in their life. None of us wants to think that our relationship isn't perfect.
Because it's seen as such a failure.
Yes, exactly. And that's not something that changes necessarily. It takes a long time to come to that realization. As we always say, leaving a situation of abuse is a process. It's not a one-time event.
But the fact, L.J. Kaufman, that we're sitting here talking and trying to emphasize the importance to the medical community that there might be a relationship between chronic illness and domestic violence, again, it just strikes me that maybe we should be farther along than we are these days.
Well, absolutely. The medical community seems to be driving the conversation right now. Last summer in the Lancet magazine, they came out with an article that 1 in 6 fractures that are presented at an emergency room are domestic violence related.
1 in 6.
1 in 6. And then recently, the University of Missouri Medical School did a survey of 153 trauma surgeons throughout North America, and they asked the question of the people presenting at the emergency room, how many do you think are domestic violence related? And they answered only 5%.
So again, the medical community is not up to speed to where it needs to be based on these numbers.
Absolutely. And in fact, in the residency program at the University of Missouri for the orthopedic surgeons, they are developing an education program for the doctors to screen for domestic violence the same way you would screen for child abuse.
Okay. Accuse me of being a broken record. I'm just surprised we're still here. I just thought we were moving farther and quicker on this issue than we apparently are.
To change the culture is very difficult. There has to be some sort of education. There has to be an awareness in the schools, in the medical community, wherever it needs to be, to say this is a problem. There is stigma associated with it. There is shame associated with it, and you don't need to have that. it happens.
We're talking this morning, if you're just joining us here on Up to Date, about domestic violence and this connection between domestic violence and chronic illness. We want to know for our listeners, what do you make of this correlation between domestic violence and chronic illness? Are you surprised by that? And how surprised are you that medical professionals these days apparently aren't more clued in to the scourge of domestic violence and all these different ramifications we're talking about here this morning? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us to updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Jennifer Brunschweiger, another stat that startled me, just 24% of respondents in your survey said they had even been asked during an exam if they had experienced abusive behaviors. How surprised are you by that?
So we asked exactly the question that you've been talking about, which and we asked it of the respondents, have you ever been screened for domestic violence? Has any doctor ever said to you, are you in a healthy relationship? Do you experience violence in your relationship? And as you're saying, only 24% said that they had ever been asked that. That is also stunning because the incidents didn't change if the woman had actually been a victim of domestic violence herself. So you might think, well, doctors aren't asking most people because it's pretty clear that most people are not victims. But that turns out not to be the case either. If you have ever experienced violent behaviors in your relationship, only 27% of those people had ever been screened for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. So this is really across the board. This doesn't change. Another interesting point here was I was really interested to hear that dentists and dental hygienists are in a very good position to see soft tissue injuries to the neck,
That's
to the mouth,
yeah.
to the face. Only 3% of people said they had ever been asked by a dentist if they had been a victim of domestic violence. So there's really a huge opportunity here for doctors to start asking women just in a general screening kind of way if they have ever been a victim. And right now, it's just not happening.
You know, Jeanette, you have victims coming to your organization every day for services. What types of abuse are you seeing every day?
Well, Steve, we see a lot of very serious injuries. And actually, I've been in this area for about 16 years, and over the past 2 to 3 years, I have seen more lethal and very, very brutal injuries than I've ever seen in the past.
Your sense is getting more serious.
That is what I am seeing, and that's what our agency is seeing. We see people that come in who have traumatic brain injuries, and they don't know it. We have people with high blood pressure. We have people come in with heart problems, and they don't know it. Many times, they have been prevented from seeking medical care by their abusive partner because the partner does not want anyone to find out what's going on, but also because no one has ever asked them. No one has asked if they are in an abusive situation.
Jennifer, any stats out there that would suggest that the situation out there against women is growing more serious, that the violence is more damaging these days?
That was outside the scope of our survey, so we didn't take a look at that. But one of the stats that came up in the reporting for our story was the number of women who have been strangled. And I was really quite shocked by that. And strangulation doesn't necessarily have any external signs, but causes really very severe long-term health problems, including neurological damage, traumatic brain injury. You know, there's a lot of conversation right now about the effect of head injuries on professional athletes, but those same long-term problems are true of abuse as well.
LJ, what's your thought on this notion that things are getting more serious, perhaps even more deadly for women out there?
Well, actually, when you look at the statistics that the Kansas Bureau of Investigation just put out, a primary type of injury that happened is with somebody with the hands, the feet, kicking, punching, strangling people, more than even with a weapon that's going on. And it's astronomical. It's over 50%.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We have two calls on the board. Both are from men. If you're a woman and you want to talk about this conversation, join our conversation. We'd like to have you. What do you make of this correlation between domestic violence and chronic illness? 816-235-2888. Let's go to William from Independence. William, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I am a man. I was involved in a marriage where I was the victim of domestic abuse. And I go to the police, I went to my caseworker, to my doctor, and I got no help. It was like, oh, okay, I'm 6'1", I do martial arts, I'm an aggressive-looking guy, and I couldn't get anybody to believe that she was the one doing it. And she even flat-out tell me, well, there's nothing you can do, I'm the woman, they're going to believe me. And that's the way it worked.
How surprising is that, Janae?
And my question is, to me, domestic abuse is wrong all the way around. But you hear so much about being done for women, but nothing's being done for men that are in these situations.
Yeah, and we know that it can be a problem for men as well, Janae.
Well, I'm so sorry about William's experience because at Safe Home, we do work with men. We provide counseling, we provide court advocacy and legal support. And while, of course, the great majority of people that we work with are women, we do work with men. We work with men who are in heterosexual relationships, homosexual relationships, but we do work with men. The only service that we are not able to provide for men is housing in our shelter. But even then, we will help them find a safe place to stay. And William's absolutely right. A lot of times people look at a man and say, well, how could he possibly be abused? But we have to remember, abuse isn't just physical. It's mental. It's emotional. It can be very manipulative. And so I would encourage William to seek out help from one of the domestic violence agencies in the area.
You know, LJ, that the fact that police, you know, aren't as sensitive, aren't sort of clued in here, and our, you know, our caller had a struggle with this. Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not. And William, I am sorry also to hear about your situation. I think there is a bias. There's a bias in the court system. There's a bias in the community for the police officers that they don't believe the men. Mm-hmm. And that's why I became an advocate for domestic violence, is to open the dialogue, open the education up, to know that it is gender neutral.
Jennifer, in your survey, did you check men, and do you have any sense of how common this is?
We're a More magazine is a magazine for women, and our readers are women, so our survey was of women. But one thing we did talk about was the effect on children, really of both sexes, obviously, and those effects can be quite devastating and quite long term. So yes, this is a problem that affects everybody for all income levels, male and female, and all ages also.
Janae, what else is being done locally to deal with this issue? What are you seeing out there?
Well, Steve, as I mentioned, we in the metro area are very fortunate because we have a collaboration between the six domestic violence agencies in the metro area, and we do provide training and response to 47 hospitals in the metro area. Those seven agencies also provide shelter, counseling, court advocacy, and you can reach all of that through the metro-wide hotline of 1-800-HOTLINE, which I know you've also put on your website.
Absolutely. You can find that at kcur.org for more information. LJ, this notion, how hard is it to get sort of people's attention on this issue, given the fact that no one really wants to talk about it? I don't want to talk about it. Here I am talking about it. Yeah.
That's a great question. Janae and I were speaking about that before the program, where people are so uncomfortable with the situation, they make off-color jokes about it. Oh, don't tell your spouse what's really happening behind closed doors. They may call the police, because it has just become such a private matter. It's culturally kind of a situation where people don't want to talk about it, or they're embarrassed that it's happening to them, that they are too weak to get out of the situation.
816-235-2888. Let's go back to some calls here. And Autumn from Kansas City, Missouri. Autumn, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, yes, thanks for having me. I would like to ask the expert's opinion on the prevalence of domestic abuse with pregnant women and women who have just delivered. I work in an office where we had a lady bring in a baby who wasn't even a week old, and it was obvious that she had been hit on the way to the office. I mean, the bruise was fresh on her face, and we wanted to speak with her about it, but she was too afraid to give us any information or even to admit that she had been hit. And so just to touch on the prevalence of abuse with, again, women who are pregnant or who have just delivered.
Abuse against pregnant women, Janae, what about it?
Yeah. Autumn, I really appreciate your bringing up this subject because actually abuse is more common for pregnant women than gestational diabetes or preeclampsia, which are conditions for which women are routinely screened. Pregnancy is one of the most dangerous times for a woman in an abusive situation. It all goes back to the threat to the abuser's power and control. And in fact, and unfortunately, homicide is the leading cause of traumatic death for pregnant and postpartum women in the United States. So pregnancy is a huge risk factor if someone is in an abusive situation.
Autumn,
what advice would you have for people who work in the medical field and see women who have just delivered or are pregnant, but who are afraid to admit that something's going on? How can we offer them assistance?
Well, again, I think that's where the training for healthcare professionals come in, so that everyone, especially those who are in situations where they're pregnant or delivering a baby, are asked the correct questions to determine if they need to get help for that situation. We can save people's lives that way.
Thank you.
Autumn, I hope that helps. Thanks for calling. Again, we're talking this morning about domestic violence and this connection between domestic violence and chronic illness. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. Janae, again, there are six organizations in the Kansas City area that offer assistance to victims of domestic violence and abuse. Listeners can find a list of them on our up-to-date webpage at kcur.org. Tell us about services that are available through an organization like yours, Safe Home, there.
Well, Steve, we have a 24-hour hotline, and people can call that. That doesn't mean they have to come into the shelter. That doesn't mean they have to accept any services, but they can just talk to someone if they're worried, if they're scared. Talk to someone and find out what is available. Find out what the options are. We provide, as I mentioned, we provide shelter, counseling. We have a transitional housing program. Leaving can be very, very difficult. You know, a lot of times people say, why doesn't she just leave? Well, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, okay. Let me go to back to some phone calls again. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. So where do we go, LJ, to this idea of reducing domestic abuse? What is missing from the discussion, and who is missing from it? Where do we have to be here?
I think the educational component is huge. Many people do not know what a healthy relationship is. There is no modeling by adult behavior that's going on. I think we should get into the public school if there's some sort of programs. I know Safe Home has a wonderful educational component, but it's only one small piece. We spoke about educating the doctors. I know the American Academy of Pediatrics now is screening for domestic violence because the impact is so great. But we need to have the awareness that it's out there and an educational how to stop it.
Hmm. Jennifer Runschweiger from More Magazine, what else do you want to see happen as you guys focus on this issue? What kinds of things are you looking at?
Well, the screening is a major component of this. I think doctors need to ask the question, and then they need to help women understand the long-term health consequences of staying in these relationships. It absolutely is a process to leave one of these relationships and can be dangerous for the woman.
Yeah.
But she does have to understand what she is risking by staying in it, that it's not just a question of waiting for the bruise to fade or the bone to heal, but that she may be risking traumatic brain injury. She is putting her child's future in jeopardy. There are a lot of things at stake here, and doctors can help women understand exactly what's going on.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Mary from Overland Park. Mary, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve. Great discussion. I have a sincere question that I'm not quite sure how to phrase. I am a former domestic violence victim who was nearly a straight-A student, runner-up to homecoming queen, all that good stuff, and landed in the shelter at the age of 34. We put together some helpful processes for women, for young women, so that we can get it into the schools, the self-empowerment and self-esteem stuff, way prevention. And I just moved to Kansas City, and I'm not even sure who to contact, how to help, help empower the middle and high school young women to learn exactly what you guys are talking about, to learn about healthy relationships early on. So who would you suggest is doing the most in that early education stuff, guys?
Yeah.
Mary, this is Janae from Safe Home, and we would love to talk to you because Safe Home, we do have an extensive education and prevention program in the schools and in the communities. We're working with Girl Scouts. We're working with other community groups and would love to have you come along and learn from your experience also. So please do call us. You can find our phone number on the website, and you can even ask for me, but I'd love to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you all for what you're doing.
Tanya, thank you for the phone call. Happy holidays. Appreciate it. Let me go back to some calls here, and Nagar from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi. I had a question for your guests. By the way, thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you.
Thanks. As a third party, as an individual on the outside of a relationship, if you were to suspect that an abuse is occurring in a relationship, what is someone to do? What are the best steps to take in order to help somebody?
Janae?
That is a very good question, and one that we are often asked. The best thing you could do is, first of all, to believe that person, because oftentimes it's very scary to even admit that this is happening. It's embarrassing. Secondly, to respect their decisions. Even though you may feel frustrated, why doesn't she leave? Can't she see where this is going? Continue to be supportive and let them know, I'm scared for you. I'm worried for you. There are domestic violence agencies and counseling that can help you. What can I do to help you? That is the best thing you can do, is to continue that support and continue to let them know that you care and that you're concerned.
That's interesting, LJ, this notion of believing someone when they first reveal that something that intimate. I imagine, based on what she's saying, that a lot of times people don't believe when they first hear that kind of news.
Oh, absolutely not. And if you are in a more affluent kind of socioeconomic situation, you have a prominent spouse, you have everything monetarily that you can ever imagine, people are less likely to believe that the abuse is going on.
Hmm. Domestic abuse is
our
topic.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, right. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Jake, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Morning. I'd like to praise the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project. I was a victim of domestic abuse and in a homosexual relationship, and my ex tried to also murder me. So they provided a counselor and support to court, and I wouldn't know what to do without them. So
What do we know about that group, the KC Anti-Violence Group, Janae?
They are a wonderful partner with domestic violence agencies, and I appreciate their name being brought up because we do work closely with them. As I mentioned before, domestic violence is not just contained to heterosexual relationships, and it's even harder for people in homosexual relationships to tell friends and family about the issue. So I appreciate that the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project is a wonderful resource. While they do not provide a residential program, they will refer people to us, and we work very closely with them.
Jennifer, what more is More Magazine going to do on this issue?
We have been really gratified by the response both from our readers in a kind of grassroots way and also from the government. So we have gotten a ton of letters from readers who have expressed that the story has helped them make sense of their own experiences. We also, with the Verizon Foundation, presented the findings of the story at a briefing on Capitol Hill, which was attended by four members of Congress, members of the Women's Congressional Caucus. And we were then also able to present the findings to the White House advisor on violence against women. And she told us that the vice president had reviewed the story and really said that they needed to take more action on this. So we were quite thrilled that the story has been reviewed by the vice president, and they're moving to take some steps. So that was really great.
Okay. Linda from Mission on the Kansas side. Linda, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Excellent comments by your speakers. I'd just like to add two things as a health professional in Mission. One, please broaden the term from just physicians to healthcare providers. It will give the women more access. And number two, socioeconomically, we need to realize that it's not just the poor or the minorities, that in fact it may be the best dressed woman in your practice that you need to open the door to. Thank you very much.
Very well said. I appreciate that those comments, Linda. Let's go to Ron from Kansas City, Missouri. Ron, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, Steve. Just wondering, is anybody looking at a correlation between chronic illness and domestic abuse for men?
We talked a little bit about that in our first half. Where can you take us on that, Janae?
I don't know of any particular studies done on it, but I would assume that there would be a similar correlation because the human body reacts to stress and trauma in very similar ways, whether you're male or female.
I hope that helps, Ron.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Tanya from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Up to Date. Our topic today, domestic violence.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to underscore the importance of this topic and to give my kudos for it being one that is addressed on your show. I work at a domestic violence agency here in Kansas City. In fact, we are one of the bridge partners that Janae mentioned. And one of the things that we've recognized as an organization is the long-term, not only the short-term, but also the long-term health effects of domestic violence. And so a few years ago, we partnered with family practice physicians and residents who now come on site to our agency to provide free health care for the women and children in shelter. And hopefully we'll be beginning to mitigate some of those long-term effects by creating some access to health care services for folks who have experienced this trauma.
Okay. Tanya, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thanks.
And again, more information on this topic available on our website, places to get some help, kcur.org. Just click on our up-to-date show. I want to thank L.J. Kaufman, an attorney and a law professor at Avila University. Thank you, L.J., for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Janae Hanslick with Safehome. Janae, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure.
And Jennifer Brunschweiger, thank you for sharing that information from Moore Magazine and the good survey you guys did.
Thank you.
Thank you. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll turn to Sporting KC in a big game, a big match coming up this weekend. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.